Awesome. Yeah. All right, I appreciate that. Yeah, thanks for having me, Eric. Right. Yeah, definitely. I think for me, it was something that I stumbled into. I started off in the advertising graphic design program, maybe headed towards more of a traditional graphic design pathway, and sort of through people and connections and opportunity ended up in UI/UX. I think a lot of people around my age who entered the industry around 10, 15 years ago have a similar story. There weren't explicit UI/UX courses at the time. Now there are. So, and it's kind of cool. Like a lot of my colleagues have like philosophy degrees and then sort of like maybe took a boot camp or like learned themselves. For me, I learned a lot of like design fundamentals at school. And then my first job was maybe more graphic design, traditional graphic design, and then my second job was more UI/UX. So I learned on the job and sort of figured it out as I went. Yeah. It must be interesting for you too, having worked or now working at Humber, to see sort of the what I imagine is a transformation of the program to some extent. When we were there, we took a like a was it a Dreamweaver course with Kevin, I think, and that was maybe the extent of it. So there's just a lot more to learn now in the classroom. Yeah. I was listening to some of your previous episodes, and you were talking recently. I think maybe it was like your last one, and you talked a little bit about like how you really can't predict your pathway. And I really resonated with that, just because every when I look back in my career, I could not have predicted where I'm at today. 12 years ago, when I graduated the advertising graphic design program, it really was a series of steps and opportunities and relationships that sort of like one step at a time took me to the next thing, to be the next thing. When I was at school at Humber, my roommate was a very talented engineer, and he just had such a passion for what he was doing and really shared that passion with me. And my portfolio graduating from Humber ended up leaning much more towards UI UX, kind of just because of him and sort of like the passion that he had shared with me. And it seemed like at the time too, and maybe still kind of is, like there was a lot of excitement around tech UI UX as this like new frontier where you didn't sort of like have you had sort of like younger people making their own decisions on how they want to build their companies and how they want to build their product, and that really appealed to me. And I think as opportunities came up, I just tried to like really lean into that. So it was a friend that I met, who was my roommate, sort of ended up sharing some of his passion with me, got my first job, and then for me, like ended up sharing stuff on Dribbble, which then led to like my first UI UX job. And then I ended up getting involved with HackerU, which is now Juno College. And through that, I got sort of my second job. So it was really like, I just could not have predicted sort of the way that I ended up here. And it was just, yeah, me learning as I went, and meeting people who inspired me to continue. Yeah, I think that's a cool perspective on it. That's right. Yeah. I was like building my first so I worked at this place called Navigator, which still exists. It was a PR firm, and they did various like they just took on clients and kind of like did whatever that client needed. So week to week, I would be working on very different kinds of projects, and some of them would require like a landing page for some initiative. So I found myself doing sort of website design, really without knowing anything about what it looks like to create a website. Like, I'm just looking or thinking about the skills that I learned at Humber, what I believe in as a designer, a graphic designer, and trying to apply it to the web space, digital space. And man, I made so many mistakes, but it was, I had a bit of like a safe environment to kind of try things out and learn as I went. But when I look back to some of the early things that I made, that they really were not great. Oh yeah, such a different time where you could kind of just like everyone was sort of feeling it out, I think, and learning as they went. Yeah, I quickly learned that I needed to have understanding around just simple sort of CSS HTML to be able to like have a conversation with the one engineer who I worked with at that time, which is how I ended up being connected with HackerU, now Juno College. I took like a little front end course, learned a ton, and sort of still appreciate the skills that I learned at that time. Yeah, I needed to know just enough to kind of be able to have a conversation. And I think now I need to be able to know enough to do some like design QA type stuff where I can hit someone sends me what they're working on or sends me a link to staging. I should be able to go in there, open up the inspector and like play around with things just because it saves a lot of time. And it can be demotivating for an engineer when you're like asking them to jump on a Zoom call and getting them to nudge things around one pixel at a time. So if I can do a lot of that on my end and then share the notes backwards, back to them, that just helps everybody. I love it. Absolutely. Yeah, that's totally it. Definitely. Yeah. I think that there is a. I care very much whenever I'm working on a team about bringing everybody along for the ride from the very beginning, especially if they're interested. And I think that, like, oftentimes engineers can be treated as like just the monkeys that you throw your design over the fence and they need to execute and they need to do all the things. And I think that just never feels great. And I think that we felt that way as designers too, where something's thrown over the fence to you. So the more you can involve people earlier on, the better things end up being. And it just makes sense. Like you build things better when you have diverse perspectives on the problem. So even more so than like, let's talk about how we might build this in a responsive way. I love to bring engineers into like conversations with customers and like conversations with like product leaders where we're like thinking about and trying to determine if we're solving the right problem. Because fast forward 5 months after that conversation, they're going to be way more dialed into what we're doing. And they just catch things that you really don't like. When you have an engineering perspective, you'll maybe be reminded of a product that you've used recently that has done this really well, or like a pattern or an example that like could come into play. So earlier the better with like everything, right? So yes, like having talking to them about like should this be like responsive? Should we build it using this pattern or this pattern is right, but then also like a step beyond that can really benefit things. Definitely. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it's such a good question. I think that like the world of UI UX for design has had a bit of a branding crisis for a while. There's been a lot of names and titles to talk about the work. And I think that's just a symptom of it being a new field, even though it's, you know, still old. Like you said, people are doing this work decades ago. I think, like, probably, you know, within the last 15 years, it's gone through a lot of different versions of itself. When I say product design, I think about facilitating the creation or modification of quality experiences for a digital product. Whenever I'm talking to someone that is really far away from this area of work and I say I'm a product designer, they're like, oh, you know, what kind of furniture do you build? So it's kind of a weird title, but it's a digital product. And I say creation or modification because I think that oftentimes what the work is you're optimizing for something that already exists. So you have like a notification panel that is not working the way customers want it to work, or you have an onboarding flow that really isn't selling the paid version of the product. So you're kind of going in and updating it. And in my experience, there's not a lot of like net new creation, or there's a lot less net new creation. But that's it. And then I would say to help qualify the quality piece of it, when we say quality, it's like improving ease of use, improving the visual design, improving performance and reliability and accessibility, which is not so often sort of associated with design work, but it definitely is. And then maybe like delight as well, which is usually something that people think of. Yeah, definitely. It's end to end, and I have realized in my work that designers, maybe partly because of who we often tend to be, I think we're very like empathetic, creative, people with interpersonal skills. It just is that way. We tend to be like people who help with like building the team up and creating process and to some extent like making sure everyone's happy and like loving their job. At least that's how I feel. So it really is all over the place. Like when I was a manager, I did a lot of like had a lot of like growth conversations with people where you kind of look at like a spread of capabilities that one designer could have, and it's immense. Like it's kind of this huge spread of different things, and only like a few of them are the things you learn in school, where it's like visual design, or like interaction design. The rest is kind of is this spread of soft skills that you don't often think about. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, totally. And that's kind of the thing you don't think about when you're starting your career necessarily. Like you're very focused on technical skills, but like at Humber, like we would do a lot of open critique where you're sharing your thoughts about other people's work and receiving feedback. And that kind of stuff is actually like super critical, I think, to being a strong employee wherever you end up. It's like how you talk to people and how you work with people and how you like work as a team that are sort of like the critical skills. And I think they're a lot harder to learn, to be honest, than maybe like Illustrator, you know. Yeah. Totally. So difficult. Yeah. How do you move through a disagreement? How do you make a decision? It's tough. And especially when you're new and, you know, you have imposter syndrome sitting on your shoulders, you know, and you're tasked with delivering something in the midst of like a variety of different voices. Yeah, it's tough. Yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah, I think that's another area where it's interesting to think about the differences between maybe like UI UX design, product design, and sort of like more of a traditional graphic design world. I mean, stop me if you feel differently. It's been a while since I've been in that space, but like you just described, I think there's sort of three audiences that you're often thinking about whenever you're creating something. So there's you and your vision. There's the person who pays you, right? Your employer, whoever, the client. And then there's the audience, the person who's going to see and experience this thing. And I think in the world of product design, the audience tends to be the one of the bigger voices in the room. And I think that you have the luxury of data, you know, like research. Maybe you're building an experience over a very long period of time, so you're always checking in with people. You're working with a data scientist, and you can understand how they're using something. So you've got a lot of insight into what they think and what they care about. And that becomes like a great neutralizer for some voices in the room. Like if you're working for an employer who has a very strong point of view and you're trying to move something forward, oftentimes you'll lean on data and what your audience is telling you to sort of neutralize what they're saying, or at least share information so they can see it the same way you do. And I think in shorter turnarounds or in maybe more traditional design worlds, you don't have that luxury. So it can be harder maybe to fight for what you think is right when you're kind of just in this subjective world where it's someone else's opinion versus yours, and you don't have data to kind of lean on and move something forward. Yeah, I think that's a really great example. It's so important to be like listening to the audience, and I think it's a luxury really to like have that insight, so you're not just like shooting from the hip or listening to the loudest voice in the room. Yeah, I think research can be intimidating for people who haven't studied how to be a researcher. But there's a lot of resources out there to sort of help you get started. I think if you are working at a small company, a team that doesn't have researchers or doesn't really like value research, you can be really in for a bit of a fight. I've often found that like it's the first thing to get cut because you just need to go quickly and we already know what to do and this is the thing, let's do it. And so knowing when to like slow things down and pitch for time to like connect with somebody who is using this product, who is experiencing this thing, is this something to like is a skill to learn, sort of like a spidey sense. I think there can be times where you're like, yeah, like this is pretty obvious. Let's just go for it. But if you have that like inkling where you're like, I think we need to learn a little bit more, making time to connect with a real person and asking them about their experience with what you're building can be so immensely helpful. And I mean, you don't need a tool to do that. You could meet someone in real life. You could, hop on Zoom with someone far away, ask family friends, even if you're strapped for like finding someone who's willing to give you your time. But I think as a designer now, after seeing the value of that, it's something that I require to do my job. So I know when I have to ask for it and sort of demand it. Because if I don't feel like I can do my job without it, I need it. So it's so case by case because every company's different, every scenario is different, but having some signal from a customer or a person on what you're doing, even if it's like just a friend to give you like a gut check with fresh set of eyes, the challenge I think in smaller scenarios is knowing when, like looking for patterns and insights. You don't want to just like do what they tell you. And if you're only talking to like one or two people, it can be tempting to just take that insight as like absolute truth. The ideal scenario is you're meeting with like 6 to 10 people and you have enough information to get a signal. So if you can only talk to a couple people, just make sure that like grain of you're taking what they say with a grain of sand, grain of salt, whatever that saying is, and putting your critical thinking hat and kind of interpreting it and using what's valuable and leaving what's not. I like that. Your mom should charge an hourly rate, turn that into a little bit of a side hustle. You might, yeah. Wait, do you mind re rephrasing that? Yeah. Right. Yeah, I know. It's like I think that's a very common pathway, especially at startups where you're expected to do absolutely everything. And so you can see it as an opportunity to learn. I do think that like calling out, I mean, if you're in like a safe environment where you can do so, the fact that like this is a maybe a larger effort or something new for you is maybe worth it, because I mean, I took a lot of big swings and pretended like I knew everything, and I think it would have been a lot better if I asked for help and sort of expressed where I'm at in my career. You know, I'm excited to learn, excited to do this, but hey, like this is a big undertaking, and I need to figure this out maybe with the team. Yeah. Definitely, definitely. Yeah, exactly. Definitely. Yeah. Partnerships, making friends, all of this stuff really helps when you're figuring it out. You need people to support you when you don't know. Yeah, definitely. So at Trello, Trello was acquired by Atlassian, which owns like Jira and Confluence and some of these other products, maybe about a year after I joined. So primarily I worked on Trello, but I worked for Atlassian. And Atlassian has a process that they talk about online, a development process. And it starts with a kickoff, then you sort of enter like a wonder explore phase. And then you're in make, where you're building the thing, testing the thing, in sort of like a live environment. And then their final stage is like impact, where you're evaluating whether or not the thing did what you hoped it would do. So I think that is like a pretty common design process, sort of like the double diamond, or where you're just like discovery, create, with some sort of like feedback loop in there. Day in life for me, it kind of depends on where I'm at along that, where my team is at. Most projects that I work on would be like the turnaround time or completion would be as short as 3 months and as long as like 2 years, honestly. So you could be in one of these cycles for months or for weeks, maybe even for like a year, which is nuts and not super enjoyable, but it does happen. So earlier phases, if I'm just kind of getting into a project with a team, I might be writing sort of an outline of like what we know, what we don't know. I might be crafting like a research proposal, talking to customers. I'm probably in Figma, trying a lot of things out early on, and sharing that back with the team and getting feedback, just sort of testing stuff out. And then moving forward, once sort of you're less the driver and the engineering lead or the engineering team is more the driver, you're doing a lot of like sort of smaller explorations where hopefully you have a good relationship with your engineering team and they're like, hey, this thing that you were kind of thinking about, you know, I think it actually would be better if we pared it down or we used a different pattern. So then you're kind of spinning off different explorations on smaller pieces. You know, probably near the end or maybe throughout, you are running some sort of early access program, beta program, something where you can get it in the hands of customers. You're talking with them, You're finding out how many mistakes you made and how many things you'd like to change, and then you're making updates sort of as you go. So that's kind of like the core thread of it. I think there's like a larger thread that is very common, I think, at larger tech companies, which is you are just talking about the work to other people continually. So you're sharing progress on the work with your immediate leaders. You find out there's other teams doing similar work, and then you're suddenly like trying to split hairs on what you're doing versus them. I mean, or like the mission changes. Like that's just happened so common, like where you've started something, you're 6 months in, and then there's an economic downturn, or like COVID hits and everyone's remote. I don't know. Like there's always stuff, and those are big examples, but there's also smaller examples. So you're kind of always pivoting. So that core thread that I first mentioned on is kind of like the easy thread. It's like the predictable one where you sort of know when to explore, when to refine, when to try to aim to deliver. And then there's this larger one that is more unpredictable, and you're really leaning into those soft skills where you're like having meetings, presenting, sharing context, fighting for your work, making sacrifices continually. That's like it's almost probably like a 80-20 or like a 60-40 split, where most of my time is on talking about the work than it often is like the work. But they are kind of one and the same, because ultimately you want to deliver this thing, so it's critical. Yes, exactly. I could kind of give a more specific example. Oh. Yeah. So Trello and the rest of the Atlassian products are kind of all around like team collaboration. So Trello is a really simple product. If you haven't used it, it's been around for a while. It's just about like moving cards across lists in this Kanban style of working. It's a super simple tool, but it's been around forever. So a lot of what we have been doing is just sort of optimizing, like I said. It's been an amazing product to work on, because there's a lot of like people who are huge fans of it, and you connect with people who love the product. It makes you feel good and makes you feel like you're doing important work. But yeah, it's all around like productivity. It's about either you yourself or you and your team getting stuff done, and how you build a product that enables people to get stuff done. So we think about the individual framework. So people like will plan their weddings or plan trips, or like just use it for like my weekly to-do. But then there's also people using Trello for like planning their sprints and running their Etsy shops and stuff like that. We have an enterprise product, and sometimes very large enterprise customers will request certain things, and I think that's pretty common. You'll try to build something for that group, but for the most part, you are trying to build for everybody, which is a very challenging challenge where everybody uses Trello totally different. So how do you build notifications for somebody who is planning their trip versus like running their small business? It's such a different use case. So it's quite hard. I think that like where a lot of these products end up going is like following the money and like building for the people who are willing to pay. It's just sort of like common, I think. But as a design team, where we were often thinking about all of these various personas all the time, which can be sometimes debilitating, but you know, it's part of the gig. Yeah. Yeah, that's a really good question. I think that great products are built by a thousand no's. And I think that it is very important to continually remind yourself that, or continually to return to what the product is and what it's looking to achieve. It's so common where something will grow and expand and become all things, but it hits some point of being confusing. I can read a book on my iPad, but I love reading on my e-reader. Like the single use of it, I pick it up and I can go to a comfy chair, and I know I'm not going to get distracted by something else. I think that you want to do one thing really well, then a million things okay. So, that's kind of where I stand on it. Product definition is so important. Yeah. Right. Yeah, I'm sure there is examples where the opposite is true. I think just specifically for product design, it's a trap that so many companies fall into where they try to do everything. And you can see them expanding and entering new areas, and it starts to get confusing, I think, for the customer. Is that a good thing? I mean, is that a good thing for you or no? Okay. Yeah, it's such an interesting topic. And then the other side of it is how opinionated is the product. The one thing that Trello, I think, wrestled with during my time there is being opinionated about what it is you should use it for. Like, I think we've always had a sort of a somewhat design principle around flexibility, where we love that it's like Lego blocks that you can build and customize. But it's a double-edged sword. The other side of that is you don't know its full capabilities. Or often we talk to customers and they'd say, I don't think I'm using this right. There would be sort of this insecurity because they were never told the right way. It's like if you got like a Lego box without a picture of what you're building, you could probably build some cool stuff, maybe some things that'll make you happy, do what you want to do. But will you know that it was the best version? So we try to get around that with like templates and maybe more guided onboarding, but it's tricky. Yeah, that's tricky. Right. Yeah. 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 And I think it does create a sense of insecurity. I think it prevents people from feeling like they've mastered the product. Maybe like they've got stuff in there in InDesign and Illustrator for everybody. But because you don't know what some of these things do for you, you're always kind of wondering if you're getting the most out of the tool. Like if you open that Lego box and there's one golden piece at the bottom, are you like, shit, I should have found a way to use this, I guess? Yeah. Yeah. And you're like, but did I want it? Did I want the glowing thing in the chest? Yeah. Yeah, I think there is an opportunity there. We should start a business and make millions. Yeah. Both. Yeah. Would love to talk about that. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think that for a UI UX type role, you'll have to have the fundamentals in there. I'll be looking for a problem statement. What is it that you're looking to change for who? Some of your process work, the outcome, the basic stuff that needs to be in there. I think the thing to realize is that everyone else that's interviewing is going to have the same stuff. So anything that you can do to give me more insight, get me excited about the work will benefit you. I love it when people say what they hope I'll get out of it. So, I'm showing you this case study because I think it shows this skill of mine, this skill of mine. I hope that you take away this from me. Being sort of meta about the whole thing, I think helps tee up a really good case study. I think one thing that you definitely feel, so when you're interviewing a lot of people back to back, maybe you felt this too. It's the same thing like over and over, and you can tell when someone is just reading from a script or has something memorized. And I think that the better interviews are a little bit more conversational, a little bit more off the cuff than just listening to somebody talk. So, practice what you're going to say, write down the important pieces to hit, but then once you're in there, try and have a discussion about the work. Take pauses, ask if the person has questions. That kind of thing really helps. This is not about case studies in particular, but I also really love, maybe this is pretty common now, but I love it when people make time at the beginning of a portfolio review to talk about who they are as a person. What are their hobbies? Where do they live? What do they like to do? Let me connect with that person a little bit more. I think that just goes a really long way. It's about people. Yeah, like somebody said this to me recently, and I think it applies when you're applying for more senior positions later in your career and earlier in your career. The person that's hiring you just wants to know that by hiring you, they'll be able to get home on time. Like, they want to know that you can do the job and not like make them have to step in for you, right? So demonstrating confidence in your capabilities, if you can like communicate that in your tone and the way you deliver your work, I think it will go a really long way. It's another like kind of balancing act thing where, I mean, you don't have to come out, nobody expects you to be perfect. Showing vulnerability, showing that you're like you can listen and move from your mistakes is like a very human, real thing. And I think if you get defensive or if you try to present an image of yourself that is flawless, it could count against you. So it's a balancing act for sure. Yeah, I think that's a good one. I think that on it, when I've been on hiring panels in the past, you're kind of looking for an interest in the product and the company, right? Like, if you could work anywhere, obviously you're working to make money, but why would you choose this place over somewhere else? So demonstrating a little bit of interest goes a long way. I think I think what you're describing is really interesting, where you could almost have something like that in your back pocket, where if you were like, broaching the subject on how you've been a user for a while or a fan of the product for a while, a follow-up question may be, like, what is your experience? What might you change? And then having that ready in response is a great idea. But I think you're right. It can come off maybe on the wrong way if you're like, and here's a slide on everything that I would change if I was in charge. So something to feel out. I love that. Turning it into a question. That's brilliant. Yeah, really great question. I think it's critical, because I mean it's critical when you're on a team working on a project, so you know what it is that you are looking to change as a result of the work and for who. I worked on so many projects before where it's a big idea and everybody sort of has their own sense of what it is they're looking to change or what it is they're looking to create. And sometimes it's hidden. So you cutting specifically to the core problem, communicating that out and aligning on it will help you down the road, because there's nothing worse than starting on something and realizing you're solving something that's a little bit different than what was expected of you or what a key stakeholder had in mind. So I think when working on anything, it's important to center around a problem. I think in an interview scenario, it's you only have a very short period of time to talk about the work. And so a well-written problem statement will bring people in quickly and get to the nugget of what it is that this work is all about. I think there's a variety of frameworks I found online. The one that I kind of come back to thinking off the cuff here is like, it's how might we, and then it's sort of like a some direction. So increase, decrease, gain adoption, try to make it as specific as you can of something, like some item for which group. So for this primary user and this secondary user. And I like that because I think that it the individual is important. If you're solving something when you haven't even like talked about who it's for yet, that's going to emerge when you're writing this problem statement. You're like, oh, I like this is actually, I don't even know who we're building this for. We should take a step back and think that through. And if you haven't thought through like the thing you're looking to change, I think that the trap that a lot of designers fall into, have fallen into this in the past, is like you're doing a refresh where you're like, oh, we just need a visual refresh of this page of this experience. So that's an easy one where you're like, yeah, of course it looks so dated and it just would benefit from a new look and feel. But that is not meaty enough, I think, to really dig into. So what metric would indicate success here for this refresh? And who are you looking to change with this update? It's just going to center everybody and everything in a better way. Yeah. Oh man. I think that the visual refresh thing is super hard. I've wrestled with it a lot because sometimes, like as a designer, you can just see that like this needs there's a quality deficit with the product that we currently have in its current look and feel. And I like especially with like in product illustrations and stuff, it can be really hard to measure what it is you're looking to change. And sometimes it's almost impossible to get something that everybody agrees on, but the act of trying to whittle it down to a problem statement, I think, will help. I think that maybe a problem statement that's coming to mind for me on Trello, we maybe 2 or 3 years ago, we wanted to do a pretty radical thing for the product. Or instead of it just being a Kanban board experience, we wanted to introduce new types of views so you could pivot the information that you're putting into Trello into a calendar, into a timeline, into a dashboard. So you're seeing the same information in a different way and hopefully getting new perspective on it and ultimately improving your work. And the part of the incentive here was competitive. There was a lot of competitors moving into this space, doing really cool stuff. And it was like, we need to be keeping up with everybody and providing people this level of functionality. The problem statement that we sort of ended up on is sort of, you know, how might we introduce these new modes of visualizing your work without sacrificing the simplicity of the product? So that in itself just gives you a little bit of juice. So, you know, when we're early stage figuring this out, you have something to sort of like hang your work on, hang the conversation around and return to when there's like, hey, we should do this wackadoodle view just because it's cool and some other product doesn't. And it's like, hey, is this actually like sacrificing simplicity? We need to now negotiate whether this is the right thing to do. Yeah. Yeah, do it. Be a professor. Yeah. Yeah. What building are you in, by the way? Was G the haunted one supposed to be? Yeah. Yeah, it's beautiful. Oh yeah. Oh wow. That's amazing. I haven't been back since I graduated, and I would love to see it. I like loved being at Humber, and I have so much love and respect for the program. It's yeah, it was a great place. Yeah, that's great. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I think one thing I wanted to talk about a little bit is, I mean, what your question on like, what to look for in junior, I'm sort of thinking back to like me being at that time in my life. And if I was to give advice to somebody who is recently graduating or new in their career, you mentioned this to me earlier on, which is funny, but I had it written prior to this chat, which is go easy on yourself. I'm definitely the kind of person who tries to control the situation, plans ahead, all that kind of stuff. And looking back to, where I started, you really can't predict where you go. And all you kind of got to do is like take the next step that feels right. Especially when you're early in your career, like being curious and chasing something down. That like all these little things that I did ended up like taking me somewhere. Like I got really into SVG animation at one point just for fun, and it ended up being like the thing that helped me get a certain job because the hiring manager was like, "This is so cool. Please like show me more about this." So I think that like yeah, staying curious and like following your instincts can really help you early on and sort of allow yourself to take the path that happens to you. It can be a little scary, right? The uncertainty of that, but it kind of just like is the way it happens. And I think, I mean, like I ended up going to university before I went to Humber College. And a lot of the reason why I did that was because of where my friends were going and where I felt sort of pressure to go. But it wasn't the thing that felt right. And also, I don't know if it's different now in high schools, but like I took university courses because I was getting better grades, and there was this feeling that in a college course headed towards college was not as respected, or like you weren't like living your potential. And that I just really wish I had a different mindset on that, and I wish I had gone to like OCAD or gone to Humber sooner. Not that my university degree was a complete like waste or anything, but I think that I did it because I felt like I had to, not because it felt right. And I think my creativity and my the path that I'm on would have unlocked sooner if I just sort of like did the thing that felt right. Right. I did business communications at Brock University. It like another thing I like you. I mean, you think it does, but it's fuzzy. It's a little fuzzy. Yeah, I really wanted to get into advertising when I was younger. I saw What Women Want when I was 12, which is probably not a great movie to return to. I haven't seen it in years, but they worked on this like campaign for Nike, and I was so struck by how creative it was. And I was like, yeah, so that's what I want to do. So I just chose the university program that was closest to that world. But yeah, I don't know. Yeah. And yeah, you're right. Like, it's very hard to remove pieces of your past and say you didn't need it. You know, it's all contributing towards where you're at, in ways you probably don't even realize. I know. Well, I mean, I don't know, but I'm interested to hear more about that. I feel guilty that this is such a one-sided experience. Next time I'm in Toronto, I'd love to grab coffee with you or something and hear about you, because I've often thought about taking a master's graduate level program there, and I know you have, so. Yeah, I guess you can cut the recording wherever. I would love to. Yeah, tell me about your OCAT experience. Okay. Oh, congrats. Yeah. Yeah. Right. I know that feeling. It's real. Devalues your own work. Dang, I can see that. Do you think that that is just the inclusivity program, or is that most of the master's programs there? Right, I see. Yeah, I get that. That's unfortunate. But I mean, I guess it did the job that you were hoping it did, which is get you to a different place in your career. But maybe it wasn't exactly what you expected it to be. Yeah, that's disappointing. Would you say that and your peers, you think that your peers share that sentiment for the most part? And so did you do this while working for the full 2 years? Oh my God. Wow. Okay, yeah, cool. No, I appreciate the candor. I feel like this is very demystifying. Like, I hadn't met a person who had graduated from OCADU, and I assumed it was the opposite of what you're saying. So it's refreshing to hear this is sort of more the reality. Yeah. Right. Yeah. 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 No, I think that's really good advice. Yeah, I mean, just briefly, the one that I had looked at was the inclusivity one. But I definitely can see what you're saying to be a reality. Like, I don't think there's like new information in that field. At least I can imagine it's stuff that we already know. But yeah, I don't know. I think I'm more so just at like a point in my career where I'm like, I should think about some new avenues. And getting your master's is sort of just one that naturally kind of creeps up. Yeah. For just 1 year. Okay. And how many, you were there for 2 years, but it's not all year. Okay, yeah. 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 Right. Yeah. You're right. Gotcha. Yeah. I see. Right. Right. Yeah. No, I appreciate that. I think that's really insightful and thank you. And I'm curious, what do you teach at Humber? Nice. Yeah. 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 Right. Yeah. Oh, cool. Yeah. Right. That's awesome. I mean, do you like it? Are you happy? As a teacher or as a designer? Okay. Yeah. 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 Yeah, that's fair. I think it's very, I mean, it's something that I think that I would like enjoy. It's very cool to like have a full circle moment. And I think off the heels of your OCAD experience and being a sort of a disgruntled student to then like apply that as a teacher, I think is a nice, I don't know, like a journey to go on. Yeah. I don't know. I think teaching is definitely like undervalued skill set. The one thing that I feel in my workplace that I'm not working anymore, but when I was working is like how important the skill of facilitation is. Like I'm like, this is so dumb and easy. Anyone can do it. But everyone be like, oh, Mark, like can you please facilitate this? Blah blah blah. you're so good at it. And I'm like, I think I don't know. Like, it's easy to like dismiss the things that you're naturally good at. And I'm sure you're a very, very good teacher. Yeah. 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 Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Very cool. You're doing it all, yeah. Yeah. That's good to hear too. Like the tech industry is sort of going through like a bit of a moment right now where there's not as many opportunities. I don't know how that translates to like other design adjacent careers, but it's nice to know that at least teaching is maybe always there. Yeah. Oh, wow. Do you feel that in design? I always kind of felt like design was less a prospect for international students because parents had a harder time buying into like being a graphic designer versus like a business diploma. Right. Yeah. 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 Yeah, right. Yeah, Right. Yeah. I know. My sister is a teacher and hates her life. She's been a teacher forever. Went to university and got her master's and is now a teacher. And she's like, I should have just been an electrician and like started my own business. Like it's hard to communicate that to a student when like everything is so tied to your status is tied to your grades and which classes you take, and you don't want to sacrifice that at such a young and like vulnerable age. It sucks that the framing of it is like college is for dumb people, and I wish that that hadn't been the case for me. Yeah. Okay. Totally. I hear you. I think the thing I just wish is like it, I might have stayed taken the same path, but just to like not feel the pressure, like for there to be a more honest conversation about my options. That and that's a that stigma is hard to remove, but I yeah, it's a bummer to hear that like we're still kind of in that space. No, I mean, I it's a different one for design, I think, than it is for engineering. Friend of mine was a waiter for a while, like totally happy being a waiter, took a course like a boot camp at Juno College and now is a very successful engineer. So it like does work pivoting your career. I think time and time again, like I've seen people do this. Design is a little bit different. I think I created a curriculum at Juno College and I co-taught it with my old manager. Who still works at Nascent. And I love teaching that course. But it is, it felt like it needed more time, or something about it just felt harder to like do in such a quick way. Like, I think Humber, like advertising, graphic design at Humber was pretty quick. Like, 2 years to learn what we did during that time is pretty significant. I don't think you'll get a job necessarily in UI UX if you just take a like 8 week course. It's just too short. If it's like in addition to prior learning, it can be really effective, but on its own is really, really hard. So it totally depends on where you're coming from. Like if you've done stuff like loosely in design before, and you're just looking to like hone in on a specific UI UX skill, great, it could do the trick, but it's a different beast than engineering, and it's important to like separate those because the success stories in engineering are real, and I think it's more mixed in some of these other disciplines. Software engineering, yeah, that's right. It's a good way to frame it. Yeah, I would recommend it. It's a great school. But yeah, I definitely, I think you're right. The intention you set going into it is critical with design. I would caution thinking that you will get a job as soon as you come out of this in design. It's just treated as a course leveling up your skill set that could take you somewhere desirable where you want to go, but it's not like a guarantee like it is in software engineering. I know, and it's not a guarantee. That's the wrong thing to say, but it just feels more like there's a higher success rate, I should say. Yeah, I totally agree with that. I think especially in UI UX at larger companies, you're often leveraging an existing design system. So it's kind of about fitting the pieces together and then telling the story around it than it is about building something new. And on my teams, like I'm usually one of the only or one of the few people who have like visual design skills. A lot of people are more like systems oriented and like UX-y, where they just like can understand and break down a flow versus like make it look visual and appealing. So, yeah. Yeah, thank you so much for reaching out. And I think this is a really cool thing that you're doing. I'm sure your students really appreciate it. And I mean, for me, I've really enjoyed this. It's also like these kind of things give you an opportunity to focus on what you believe in and the things you care about. And it's like just in the like short amount of time leading up to this, it was nice to like think a little bit on where I was at when I started, what I care about now, and all that stuff. So thank you. Yeah, very down for that. Cool. Thanks, Eric. All right. Bye. Why am this?